Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Isaiah 40:31 is the life verse for our guest today. Please welcome adoptive mom and missions pastor of Timberline Church in Fort Collins, Colorado, Carrie Stewart. Welcome, Carrie.
It's great to be with you. Thank you so much for the invite.
Well, thank you for agreeing to be on. I love your story, and I'm thrilled that you're going to share it with our listeners.
Yes.
So to get everybody up to speed here, you and your husband, Jeff, have been married 40 years. Congratulations. And you are parents of 9 children, 3 biological children, and 6 children through international and domestic adoption.
That's correct.
A large family. So let's just start at the beginning. What led you and Jeff to pursue adoption?
Oh, truly God. Only God. It was really remarkable. Growing up, I grew up in a pastor's home, and we had missionaries in our home frequently. And hearing them share about the orphans that they ministered to and the communities they were in left an imprint on my heart that came to fruition after we had biological children and weren't able to have any more children of our own.
Wow. So that was just planted in your heart from a very young age. You understood there were orphans and there was a need. Then how did God first get you to focus on adopting from China?
You bet. You know, we weren't talking about adoption at that time. We were attending a new church, and God really just started speaking to my heart about China, and I didn't know why. I happened to be home from work one day, caught a Christian television show that was about the dying rooms. And I cried through the whole thing. And God was saying, I want you to go there. I have a child for you there to bring home into your family. So I just began asking my husband to pray with me about it. And at first he was like, you are crazy. We just got our youngest child in school full time. What do you think? And I said, I don't know. It's waking me up at night to pray for this little girl in China. And I just need you to pray with me. And so he agreed to pray. And it wasn't just a few weeks later that he came back and said, yes, he too felt like we should adopt from China. He really wanted to say no, but he said, there's no reason for me to say no. So let's take a step ahead.
Wow. And this was a number of years ago, right?
Yeah, this is 25 years ago, 26 actually. Yeah. Wow.
So anybody who's in the adoption arena knows that the adoption process changes, you know, like the wind basically. So back then, 25 years ago, what was that like adopting from China? What were your next steps?
You bet. Well, China had very strict criteria. They were very strict on you must be 35 years old and you must be childless. Well, obviously we did not fit that criteria. We went ahead and submitted an application to Holt International. And they quickly got back with us with a phone call. There was not email at that time, which seems crazy to think about, but they called back and said, you know, we're so grateful for your application and see that you've requested to adopt from China. You and your husband don't meet the criteria for China. Would you consider adopting from the Philippines? And we said we would pray about it. And we did. We talked about it, prayed about it, but man, really God was saying, go China. I want you to go to China. So we called Holt back and said, we would like to send our dossier to China and let's see what happens. And it was a pretty quick turnaround. It seems like we turned our dossier into Holt in August of 1995 and had a referral back from them in November.
Wow. So even though you didn't meet the criteria, they approved you and accepted you anyway.
Yes.
Wow.
So did you
have to travel to China at that time?
We did. Yeah. We traveled a few weeks later. with 9 other families, and we all went to the same province. It was the first time that any Americans had adopted from this province. It was very new to the people of China and in that region. They didn't understand why we were there and didn't understand why we had their little girls in our arms.
So you adopted a little girl?
Yes.
How old?
She was 17 months at the time.
Aww. And when you brought her home, what was that adjustment like?
It was hard. It was really good. Such an answer to prayer but I had a conversation with a friend before we went to China. I had lunch with a friend and she said, you know, well, how do you know what you're going to get when you adopt, and how are you going to discipline your child? And I thought that was the most ridiculous question anybody had ever asked me, because I thought, well, we have 3 biological kids and doing great. And in my naivety, mm-hmm. we're going to just discipline the same way. At that time, I had no idea the impact of a child being abandoned, grieving loss, having trauma in her life. I didn't know that we would need to discipline differently. And God was incredibly gracious to me, but it took me 2 to 3 years to figure out I need to get on a different track in discipline.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that for sure. But you brought home your first little girl through adoption through China, but it wasn't long and you adopted again. So
true.
God was clear this time that you were to adopt. So tell us what happened next with the second adoption.
You bet. Well, Elizabeth, a really bright young lady, and she recognized right away that she didn't look like us. She did not like that she didn't look like her family. So if you asked her what color of hair she had, what color of eyes, she would say she had blonde hair and blue eyes. And so Jeff and I began to start praying about adopting again. And we really felt like it needed to be from an Asian country. Really, we kind of thought it would be China. But God really led us to Korea. And we then went to submitted our application with a local agency here in Colorado and asked to be put on the list for a girl in Korea. And that process was also very quick for us. We had a referral with just in a few months of a little girl, and she came home within that same year. And our daughter from China was very thrilled to have a sibling that looked like her. And she then was able to accept her brown hair and her brown eyes because now she had a sibling with the same.
Aw, I love that story, just how she could identify with her own identity with a sister now. I love that. So it didn't take long. I'm not sure if you can tell us how long, but it didn't take long after bringing home your daughter from Korea that you felt led to adopt again, this time domestically. So how did you pursue a third adoption?
We heard about, you know, just in the adoption community, once you are connected with people and agencies, you start hearing hard to place stories. Mm-hmm. Heard that African American male infants were the hardest to place in the United States. And so Jeff and I, God really started stirring our heart about adopting a child that was African American. We do not live in a community that has a lot of African American population. But we just continued to pray about it and started working with a local agency who specialized in placing African-American children, and just started working through that agency to find out what options. We did look at waiting children across the United States, but we had doors closed specifically in that area and found out about a little baby in Florida. And we, at that time, when we first heard about him, we were in process of waiting to find out if we would be approved to adopt 2 children, siblings in Missouri, and were declined for that. But found out that the baby was still waiting in Florida, and that opened the door for him to come home at about a month old.
Wow. So once your son was home, you realized, like with your China-born daughter, that he needed a sibling that looked more like him, an African-American sibling. So you stepped out for adoption number four. And I'll let our listeners know, we know these children are not numbers, yes. but out of just they're real children, but out of respect for their privacy, we're not going to share their names today. So we're just kind of saying, you know, whether they're the son or daughter and what country and what number in the adoption order. So you stepped out to adopt for a fourth time. So tell us about that.
Yes. Well, actually, our son started, of course, recognized he did not look like his family. Nobody else had dark skin like he did or curly hair, but he actually started asking for a black grandma. So we began looking kind of in nursing homes in our area. They did not have any African-American residents. And then he started just asking for a black brother. And so we just started praying about that. And again, got with our adoption agency, began working with a birth mom in Florida. That ended up not working out. She family stepped in at the last moment to adopt, to care for that child. And so we just continued to wait. Adoption is such a waiting game.
Yeah.
Every single day, you know that you could get a phone call or you pray for that phone call. And we received many phone calls during that season of from an agency saying, hey, we already have a birth mom in labor. Would you be interested? And we said, yes, every single time. But the door would close the next day with a family member stepping in. So we just kept saying, okay, God, we trust you. And one day we got a call from an agency in Nashville, Tennessee, saying they had an African-American baby girl and wanted to know if our family would be interested. And of course, we were a resounding yes. And we were able to fly to Tennessee and pick her up just a few days later.
Oh, wow.
Our son was thrilled to have a sibling that was African-American, but he still was pretty like, well, I really wanted a black brother, please.
Well, that's because you weren't done yet.
Yes.
God was not done and neither were you. So you did pursue adopting a fifth time. So tell us that story.
You bet. We always had a heart for Haiti. Our son that was born in Florida was is half Haitian and half Jamaican. And Haiti, just we've always had a connection with ministries there. My husband's traveled there a couple times with the ministry, Children of the Promise specifically. And just the door wasn't open for large families. And we just heard one week that that Haiti was open to large families. There was a window of opportunity for larger families to submit a dossier. And we felt God leading us once again to adopt, add to our family through adoption through Haiti, submitted our dossier, asked for placement of a boy between the ages of 1 and 2, and were quickly assigned with our son. And that turned out to be a pretty long process. Haiti is very unpredictable in the adoption process. And that was about 2.5 years before he came home of different changes, but God's faithful. And he came home during in that time.
Yeah. He was about 3.5 years old.
Yes.
When he came home.
Yep.
Wow. Incredible. And then, so then was your first African-American son happy to now have that brother?
Yes. I'm very happy.
So a brother and a sister. So,
yes.
But even with 5 adopted children, you still heard God's invitation to adopt again, a 6th time.
Yes.
So how did that come about?
Well, I kind of remember writing a blog post during this time about a strange feeling, having a van full of kids. At this time, we're driving a passenger van. For all the reasons of comfort of getting everybody in and out of the car and so that we could put a potty chair underneath the seat in the van when we're at the park and there's no bathroom. But I had a sense that we weren't done. And it's a really odd thing to have a van full of kids and feel like you're not done. Mm-hmm. And one day, and it, just to put some context in this, our son that we adopted from Haiti really had a lot of challenges when he came home. That first year, I thought I could like lose my mind. It was very difficult and just learning how best to help him and come to find out really it's me who needed to make some adjustments myself and not our son. But I was sitting in our van enjoying the peace and quiet before the storm of the kids all getting in the van after school. And I heard God speak very clearly to my heart, I want you to adopt a child with Down syndrome. And my response was immediate. I was like, no way. But God, I'm barely feeling like I'm staying afloat right now. There's no way I can parent a child with Down syndrome. And he ever so sweetly and gently spoke back to my heart. And he said, you're right. You can't, but I can. Mm-hmm. He really spent the next 6 to 8 months changing my heart. And it looked like anytime I was out and about, I would always run into a family with a baby with Down syndrome or an adult with Down syndrome. It was constant, repeated. God was getting my attention. And each time my heart melted a little more. And it was one specific time at Christmas time, I was helping our kids into our school with their gifts at right before Christmas break, helping them with gifts for their teachers. And this little girl, I've never seen her before. We've been in this community a long time. Don't know who she was, but she ran up to me and she said, I want to show you a picture. I want to show you a picture of my cousin with Down syndrome. Mm. And she shoved this picture right in my face. And I was, oh my goodness. I looked up at this guy and I said, I'm done. I submit, God, to what you're calling our family to. And I told my husband, so I'm going through all this journey and I'm not sharing that with my husband because I'm battling myself with saying yes to this. And surely he's going to think I'm insane if I bring it up. And because we're both struggling with helping the kids that are currently in our home. And I spoke to my husband about it and asked him to pray with me. And he was much quicker than me to come back and say yes.
Wow.
Specifically to a little girl that we'd been sent that her profile and her name is Xenia. And he said, she is the next flower in our garden. Aww. And it turns out that was our last adoption. And she's just a treasure.
Aww. And she was adopted from which country?
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong. And she's now how old?
16.
16. So you've been on this journey for a very long time.
Yep.
Carrie, what, if you could sum up your adoption journey in one word, what would it be?
Oh, well, the first word that comes to mind is life-giving. Mm. And I'm surprised by that, actually, because there's been times when I thought it was sucking the life out of me.
Yes.
Seriously. But that's the first thing that came to my mind when you asked that question. It's been life-giving because God's invited us to be part of these kids' stories. He's invited us in a very powerful way to be united, for our hearts to be knit together. And that's an incredible invitation to be a part of. So I'd say life-giving.
Awesome. Awesome. And during the season of adopting all of your children, you actually started an orphan ministry in your church. Why is that so crucial?
Wow. When immediately after we adopted our daughter from China, I realized I needed a community. I needed friends who were also foster or adoptive moms, people who kind of understood where I was at, because my friends at church or women's ministry, they didn't quite understand some of the struggles because they'd say, well, if God called you to this, why is this hard? Why are you struggling? And so I'm thinking to myself, well, it's just hard. And I really don't know why, but I needed some people. So I just started introducing myself to other moms that obviously look like they'd adopted children from other nationalities and just asked them if they'd start like to get together. And I started a moms group and we met for several years and all of those kids are still friends. But there got up to be like 30 of us moms that would meet once a month and just to get our kids together so they would see that there's families come in all shapes, sizes, and colors. And in fact, I'd say our son that we adopted from Florida, who's African American, he didn't know that Black children had Black moms because all of his Black friends had white moms. And one day at church, we have a young man in our church who's African-American. And he said, hey, I'd like to take Logan to go meet my mom. And at that time, he was about 4 years old. And I said, sure, go ahead. And so he comes back and we're in the van. And any of you moms know that all important questions come from the back of the van. And we're driving home from church, and from the back seat, our son says, "Why didn't I get a black mom?" So it's those questions like that. But that forming that adoptive moms group really helped me see that we need each other. Mm. I asked our church, could we see if there's interest in having an adoption foster care ministry here? And they gave us the green light. They said, nobody's ever asked to do that. So at the time, I was given a book by a friend, Fields of the Fatherless by Tom Davis. And I read it and I knew that was the book that would help us as a group just seek God about starting an adoption ministry. So we had some signups in our, asking people if you're interested in finding out more about starting adoption ministry here at our church, be part of this small group. And 30 people signed up for a summer small group, which is incredible. Wow. And yeah, we met through the summer with the whole intent, we're going to do this study together, and we're asking God, are we to start an adoption, foster care, orphan ministry here at church? And it was very unanimous by the end of that 6-7 weeks. And Welcome Child Orphan Ministry was born at that time.
Oh, I love that. And God does that a lot, because I know our organization, Justice for Orphans, was birthed after we had adopted all of our children. And God just kind of has you in that space and has children on your heart. And you're compelled. You have to step into that area of justice. So I love when he does that. Now, we talked a little bit about parenting children. Mm-hmm. With trauma backgrounds, and you adopted back in the day before our beloved Dr. Karen Purvis wrote her book, The Connected Child. There was no Empowered to Connect back then, not really very many resources for adoptive families regarding trauma. So how did you learn how to effectively parent your kids from hard places?
Wow. Talking with a lot of other moms, what's successful for you? Just to give some background, my husband and I, through our church, we went through a parenting class that really taught first-time obedience. And that was really effective with our kids, our biological kids. It was not effective for our kids that we brought home through adoption, because we didn't know at that time, but we didn't have their trust. They didn't trust that we would come back. Whether it was a church nursery or just behaviorally, dinner times was so challenging. The first book I think I first read that really helped me was The Heart of Anger. And the author right away in the beginning of the book really started talking about, it's not so much about the kids. It's about things that you as a mom or a dad haven't worked through, that's now coming to the surface. So any challenges I found, and now I'm able to talk with foster and adoptive families about that, anything you have not kind of worked through in your own life, it will bubble to the surface in when you are parenting children who face trauma, neglect, and abuse. And so that book really helped me realize I needed to look inward at myself and ask God to show me about things I needed to work on. Another technique that really I never heard about was time in. Mm-hmm. It seems silly now. Previously, with our biological children, timeouts were very effective because they wanted to be with us. Mm-hmm. Timeouts for our kids who have had challenging backgrounds and were not born into our family, it was very hard for them, and it caused them to react in anger to the point where they just destroy things in their room or be destructive. And one of a friend shared with me about time in and how they use time in, and that was brilliant. That was so effective for all of our kids to say, you know what, I see that you're going through a challenging time right now. So for the rest of the day, you and me are buddies. You and me are just going to be together. If I go do laundry, you're going to come with me. If I go to the restroom, you're going to sit outside the door. And it really was a calming thing. One thing that I didn't know this was even the right thing to do at the time, our son that we adopted from Haiti really liked hot tamales. So I always kept hot tamales in my dresser. And when he was really struggling, and that was frequent, so we ate a lot of hot tamales, but I would sit cross-legged and he'd sit in front of me and I would feed him hot tamales while we talked through a challenge that we had just been through. And it could have been a temper tantrum that lasted for 2 or 3 hours. But after he calmed down, we'd sit face to face. And at first he's not making any eye contact with me and we're talking about what happened. And I'm talking about how I could have responded better. And he's thinking about ways he could have responded better. And by the end, we've maybe eaten 10 or 12 hot tamales at this point. He's making eye contact with me, able to talk about. But those are things I didn't know. I didn't know some of these techniques. And God was gracious in providing friends and just to pray for us. That was a huge thing that I can't not neglect to say, is that we had a team praying for us, that we could say, hey, we're having a tough day. Can you pray for us?
Yeah, that's vital for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, for our listeners who might be considering adoption, or whether it be international or domestic, you know, I'm thinking that they might be thinking, how on earth could you afford six adoptions, three of which were international? So can you share with us how you were able to do that?
You bet. And to know, our international adoptions were cheaper than our private adoptions, our private domestic adoptions. Adoption costs are changing all the time, and it is overwhelming when you look at the cost. But when you feel God calling you to do this, I just encourage people, don't let fear keep you from doing that. There are so many resources. At the time when we were going through adoption process, there weren't too many grants to apply for. Sometimes agencies had grants for children with special needs. But at the time where we live in Northern Colorado, we were seeing an increase in home values. We were able to use the equity in our home for a few of our adoptions. Some had received internal grants from the agency that we adopted through that provided a reduced cost. We always had enough money to do our home study for all of our adoptions. We never had all of the funds to start with. We had enough. I always called it seed money. We had seed money. And then God was faithful, just saying that yes, putting that money down for the home study and saying, okay, God, we're going to trust you with the rest. And he did always work it out, whether it was through home equity, whether it was through some donations from friends at church, say, hey, really want to support you guys. We don't feel called to adopt, but we want to support you in your call.
Wow. Those are incredible ways where folks can get behind mm-hmm. an adoption. Like you said, there's always something for everybody to do. Mm-hmm. And I love that you can invest in another mm-hmm. family's adoption. Carrie, what would you say to our listeners who might be feeling God leading them towards adopting or leading them towards becoming a foster parent? What would you say to them?
I'd say start praying, and please invite other people to pray with you. Invite people in. I remember the first time when God called us to China, I felt like I was holding these precious jewels. This call was so precious that I wanted to be careful who I shared it with. So I encourage you to be careful who you share it with, but do invite a couple close people. Invite your pastor. Let them know, hey, God's putting this on our heart. We don't know if we're to say yes, but will you join us in prayer? Also, connect with other foster adoptive families. If there is an organization in your community that does a night out for foster adoptive families, volunteer. Volunteer to serve those families. Find out what their needs are. And I think that's a great step.
Yeah, to connect with other foster and adoptive
yep.
parents so you can really
yes.
learn from them, because they'll be your tribe going
yes.
forward, your
yes.
community that you will need. So wonderful advice. Carrie, as we wrap up today, what is on your heart that you really want to be sure that our listeners take away from our conversation?
You bet. Really want to encourage everyone to be part of a community that understands where you are. If that isn't one, prayerfully consider creating one. So don't let fear keep you from taking the next step. When God calls us to foster care or adoption, take him at his word that he will never lead you. He's going to guide your every step. And the last thing is wait on the Lord. Sandra, as you started with Isaiah 40:31, those that wait on the Lord will gain new strength. They'll mount up with wings like eagles. They'll run and not get tired, and walk and not become weary. Sometimes that waiting is resting.
Mm-hmm.
When you rest in God, that turns to trust in God. So I encourage you to wait, rest, and listen.
Wonderful advice. Thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your stories.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. And if you would like to contact Carrie, maybe you've heard about all these different forms of adoption and you want to, and you have a question for her, you can email her at Karalott, K-A-R-A-L-O-T 9@gmail.com. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes. Is God stirring your heart toward adoption or foster care? Check out our website, justicefororphansny.org. At the top of our homepage, you'll find some tabs, one for adoption, one for foster care. You can click on them to find information and resources about those topics. You can also contact us directly if you have questions and need some guidance along the way. If you don't feel led to actually foster or adopt, but God's stirring your heart to do something, check out our Care Portal tab and learn how you and your church can impact local children and families in crisis through Care Portal. And of course, you can invest in Justice for Orphans by making a donation or volunteering. Our 2020 vision is to launch another local county here in New York's Capital Region in our Care Portal network. Your $20 monthly gift will help us reach our goal this year. Again, you can give safely and securely online at justicefororphansny.org. Just click on that donate button. And thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the podcast, you can find and follow more episodes on iTunes, Podbean, and Google Play. Just search for the show by name, Orphans No More. You can also find the podcast right on our website. Again, that's justicefororphansny.org. Be sure to find and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.